as a pastor, I can get into the Allen County Jail because I have this particular identification card with my name and picture on it. And I can get into the parking garage at Lutheran Hospital because I happen to have this particular card issued in my name. And I can go across the country and purchase items in many stores, like many of you, because I happen to have this particular master card that has also been issued in my name, and others like it that identify that I am the possessor of that particular card. Our text this morning in John chapter 4 is about the familiar story of Jesus at Jacob's well, where he meets a woman of Samaria. And I should like to look briefly at this text with you under the theme of the implications of identification. Or to put it another way, this text is loaded with the significance of identifying certain important things which have eternal implications for all of us. First, we are confronted with the implications of identification relative to location. John is very specific in identifying just where this event takes place. He approaches it from several angles. So he, Jesus, came to a city of Samaria. We are in Samaria, Samaritan territory, called Sychar, a specific name of a certain village, near the field that Jacob gave to his son Joseph, a field that would be well known in Jewish circles. Jacob's well was there. We have now identified not only the country, but the village and the field and the well. But John will go on to identify the condition that Jesus was in and the time of day. And so Jesus, wearied as he was with his journey, sat down beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. All the minute details for the setting have been identified. Secondly, Jesus will identify a particular woman. Listen, there came a woman of Samaria. He goes on to identify why she had come there to draw water. Jesus will identify his leadership fashion through a question. Give me a drink. And then he will identify why he is alone and where the disciples are, for his disciples had gone into the city to buy food. And then the woman will identify the strained relationship between Samaritans and Jews. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria?" And then the reasoning for this statement is identified, for the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. In this opening section, Jesus identifies himself with this woman of Samaria. He is calling upon her to take what she has and share it with him, namely a water pot with which she could draw water and something which Jesus did not have. It is in this fashion that God identifies himself with us, by calling us to take from our earthly resources and use them in God's humble and menial service. But Jesus does more. He identifies the person. There is no doubt as to who he is dealing with. In fact, out of her own mouth, she identifies who she is. It is this very outcast person despised by the Jews for ethnic reasons, and later on we shall see for moral reasons. Nevertheless, with whom Jesus identifies as a person, he converses with her. He requests something of her. He associates with her. He is ready and eager to receive something from her. Doesn't this then say volumes to us about God? Our God is willing to take the time to sit down with us, to converse with us, to associate with us, to receive from us, no matter who we identify ourselves to be. Thirdly, Jesus identifies himself. Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." Here Jesus identifies himself first as the gift of God. If you knew the gift of God, and that is who Jesus is, isn't he? He is Bethlehem's gift to the world. He is the gift mentioned in John's earlier third chapter, for God so loved the world that he gave. He gave his only begotten Son. And that is how God identifies himself to us, as a gift that God gives to you and to me. Further, he identifies himself as living water. He would have given you living water, not just any water, not even the purest water we could ever drink, not even the coldest water, not just clean mountain stream water, but living water. It is this living water that John will describe in the book of Revelation. Then he showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb, thus identifying its source. Jesus is that living water. Furthermore, he identifies that he is greater than the great patriarchs. The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself and his sons and cattle?" It is precisely in the question that we find the answer. Are you greater than our father Jacob? You have so said. Or Jesus elsewhere will identify himself in these terms: before Abraham was, I am. Jesus identifies who he is. He is God himself. Then Jesus goes on to identify just what this living water is like. Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst again. The water that I shall give him will become in him a spring of water, welling up to eternal life." Jesus is talking about living water. He's not talking about a dried up well. He's not talking about a well that may be producing today and gone tomorrow. He is the spring of water that provides its own replenishment. He is the source, not some distant source, be it patriarch or prophet. He is the one who provided water at Marah for the Israelites. He is the one who chose to begin his public ministry by changing water into wine. He can divide the waters of the Red Sea or the Jordan River, or walk on the Sea of Galilee. It makes no difference. Further, Jesus identifies our sin. In the context, you will recall that Jesus asked this woman to go and call her husband. Her response to him is that she has no husband. And Jesus identifies that she, in fact, has had five husbands and is living with a man now who is not her husband. The Lord identifies our sin. We may be able to keep our sin from our family. If a college student away from home moves in with a roommate of the opposite sex, that might be kept from the family. You may be able to keep a secret from your spouse when you have not been faithful. You may be able to keep your sin from your congregation when you have not always been honest with them. But it is the Lord who identifies personally and directly to you just what your sin is. Going on, Jesus identifies that we shall thirst again and again and again when we thirst after the wrong things. For those who thirst after an immoral life, their thirst will never be satisfied. For those who thirst after riches, their thirst will not be quenched. For those who thirst after pleasure, there will always be demands for greater thrills. For those who thirst for alcohol, there will never be enough in the bottle. For those who thirst for mind-inhibiting drugs, there will never be enough money to buy on the street. For those who thirst for sin, they will never be satisfied, but will require more risque and burlesque feats. Those who thirst after another man or woman's spouse will never be satisfied. But finally, Jesus identifies just how our needs are met. "Sir, give me this water." To this woman may have been thinking of modern plumbing, but her words still hold water. "Sir, give me this water." We also, by God's grace, have been brought to the point where my soul longs, yes, faints, yes, thirst for the living God. By God's grace, we are among those blessed ones who hunger and thirst after righteousness. Sir, give us this water. And we have come here today requesting that assuaging water. We request it when we come believing that our answer lies in Him. This water is given to us when we believe that He is the gift of God. He is the living water. He indeed is greater than Jacob. He is the one who gives us to drink and we will never thirst again. He is the one who takes the torrential rains of last week and turns them into the fruit of the vine this week. He is the one who has provided a meal for us to sit down with Him, not at Jacob's well, but at this altar rail. There we learn the value that Christ places upon us, for He desires to have communion with us and grant to us living water that will be an eternal spring that will not fail us until the time comes that we sit at table with Abraham and Isaac and, yes, even Jacob. May the peace of God, which surpasseth our understanding, keep our hearts and minds in Him who has revealed Himself to us as living water.